Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Green Divas Radio Show. You're on with Green Diva Meg.
And Green Diva Lynn.
Hey, Lynn.
Hey, Meg.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, Yay. You know. What can I say, man? We got a great show coming up.
As always.
We've had a busy week. Lynn and I have been busy. We've been writing and sharing and getting out there, man. I had a weird Sunday. I woke up, or not, I don't know if it was Sunday. Yeah, it was over the weekend, Saturday. Woke up to the radio, which we do, but my husband left the alarm on. Mm. And it was NPR. We always have NPR on here, WNYC. And they were doing a promo for, Brian Lehrer was doing a promo for an upcoming show this week that they were doing. Involving military food innovations that have become, you know, common in our, you know, civilian food world, right?
Right.
And I was like, oh. And they mentioned, you know, a couple of things, different things. And I was like, they didn't mention frozen food, frozen meals. And I happen to know the guy who invented frozen dinners, thank you very much, my grandfather.
Wow.
Who doesn't get credited, you know, it's usually Birdseye and Swanson, but no. So anyway, I kind of got inspired and I ended up writing a post about sort of my foodie roots, you know?
You're definitely a foodie.
I'm definitely a foodie.
I'm a foodie too, but you're such a great cook too, so.
Well, this is why I'm not skinny. But that's okay. I'm healthy.
You are. Yes. I love your food.
Well, anyway, so I kind of go back into the roots from my grandfather, who I never met, but we share a middle name, right through my, you know, my mother and kind of what it was like as a kid. And she had a love of food. And there you go. It's an interesting little journey.
I love your post.
Yeah.
So
well,
interesting.
You're a fan. I love you.
I love you.
And then you had a nice post that you did. I love Lynn's writing. It's so much fun, about feeling sick. That got reposted on Maria Shriver.
I know. I'm so excited about that. That was my first one up on Maria Shriver's site.
Yeah. They're going to love you, kid.
Oh, gee.
Well, it's fun because Lynn and I don't get to write. We're both writers, and neither of us get to write as much as we would like. So it's fun when we, you know, when it happens and when we get to share it, right?
Yeah, I know. I have to do more of that.
Yeah, we're working on that.
Yeah.
So in the meantime, you know, we make good radio shows and posts and all kinds of other fun things, right?
We're hard at work.
So this week we picked, the feature is one that we really, really enjoy. We're going back in our repertoire this end of the summer here.
Our repertoire.
And our one of our favorite all-time interviews, features from this year was Ken Cook, who's a really great guy, very, very interesting, accessible, and obviously like making a huge impact in our world. So we're replaying that, which is still relevant.
Yeah, and I think I was in the studio for that one.
Yeah, so it was extra fun. And he, if anybody doesn't know, is the I think he's the founder and executive director of Environmental Working Group, who we quote and resource and source or whatever all the time.
Absolutely.
We do
great organization.
And we do a product review with a number of products for the bathroom, organic linens, you know, towels and bath mats. And it's an interesting segment because we talk about why organic is important for cotton, not just for food.
Right.
Yep. And while we were in the bathroom, I had Dr. Karen Lee in the studio a couple months back, and she did a really great at-home segment about a couple of things in the bathroom that, you know, like unclogging a drain that's gnarly.
Always fun.
Without using all the highly toxic chemicals. And it's pretty interesting, actually.
Wonderful.
And a couple of other things for the bathroom. And then I think we're going to do a two-minute gardener with our Wisconsin vegetable gardeners about nitrogen in the soil and how you can get more nitrogen in your soil.
And Win Paris.
Oh.
I know. Africa ASAP.
Well, it was just World Elephant Day or something last week.
Right. So we thought we would put him on last week's show, but then that didn't happen, so he's on this week's show.
Well, there you go. Now, I'd like to mention Stitcher, because if you use the Stitcher app to listen, which a lot of people do, would you be so kind as to find the Green Divas radio show? Give us a like, a review, you know, mention. We'd really, really appreciate it, and share it up. Let people know that you can find us there.
Yeah, it's pretty easy. There's some stars underneath our logo, so click on that. Hopefully you'll give us a five.
Yeah.
Five-star rating, and then scroll down and you can leave a comment.
Yeah, let us know you're listening. Please. And certainly any suggestions or...
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah. So anyway, enjoy the rest of the show. Happy summer. We'll be talking to you next week. Looking for low-stress ways to create a healthier, non-toxic environment in your home? The Green Divas make it fun and easy with useful information for making a beautiful and eco-friendly Green Diva home. Yay, another at-home, Green Divas at home with Dr. Karen Lee. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Ben. You just caught me drinking my tea.
She's about to. Yeah, because we're having fun here. We're just a couple of gals having tea. And
I love this studio.
Yakking about. Yeah, this is the first time you've been to this studio.
Yeah, it's very pretty.
It's a lot of
cozy.
Fun. Yep. I know.
I'm going to get my own desk in that corner.
Yeah, see? I know. You'll be back.
I will.
So today, we're going to talk about bathroom and how we can have a healthier, non-toxic bathroom. And I know that there's a couple of things. And when we were talking, I said, oh, I have this one drain in my master shower that is really annoying. It just periodically backs up, and then my husband has to kind of fish out.
You know, it's funny, and not so funny. This morning when I was leaving, rushing to take my shower, I'm like, I noticed the water was kind of collecting, you know, by my feet. I'm like, oh, I got to do my...
Don't you hate that?
I hate that. I really do. Because, you know, I have long hair and I'm at that age.
Hello.
And everything falls out. And I, you know, there's nothing worse than stepping on my own hair and pooled water. And I said, oh, I gotta do my usual monthly cleaning over here in my drain. And I tell you.
And that's about what it is for us. You know,
yeah.
We have like a periodic.
You have to, just like everything else. Like I mentioned, you know, maintaining all your appliances. Yeah. It's just like cars. Yeah. You gotta maintain your drain pipes too. Because one of these days.
Apparently.
Yeah. One of these days, you're gonna have to call that man.
So you have some non-toxic way to do this. I know you do.
Well, because I do every month. What you have to do is you have to get some hot, really hot. If your water, hot water temperature is not that hot, you have to boil water so that it'll get to be that hot temperature.
Okay.
And baking soda.
Mm.
So what you do is you pour baking soda as much as your drain will allow it to go down. So if the baking soda gets wet, you kind of have to like use your finger to kind of push it down.
Down.
Yeah, push it down. But you want to push it down as much as the drain will hold.
Really? Okay.
And then let it sit there for a good 5 to 10 minutes, if you can wait that long.
Mm-hmm.
And then after about 10 minutes or so, you pour the hot water into the drain and let it, you know, let it kind of slowly drain.
Okay.
And then after that, you want to mix a little more. You want to pour a little more baking soda and then pour down about a cup of vinegar.
Ah, white vinegar.
Yeah, white vinegar. But the key is you have to clog the, you know, there's a little hole, like an air hole for the bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
That's on the side of the side of the bathtub, like usually underneath the faucet.
Right.
There's a hole there. You want to close that hole and close the drain. So you want to keep the gas inside, as it bubbles.
Yeah.
You want to close both holes so that reaction of baking soda and
the vinegar
bubbling happens.
The little volcano.
Yeah. Yeah,
isn't
you want
that
the little
science experiment with all the kids?
You want the volcano to happen in your drain.
Yeah.
Believe me, it's not going to explode.
Because it'll go down. Yeah.
Right. What that does is that the first step of adding the baking soda, what that does with the hot water, it loosens up any kind of debris, hair, gross scum, stuff like that, just gets loosened up a little bit.
Right.
And then adding the baking soda and the white vinegar will create that
pressure. Yeah.
Well, you know, it creates that bubble and it'll just loosen up even more. And it'll make it go down.
Cool.
So then after that, then pour the hot water again, and it'll just flush everything out. If it doesn't work the first time, just repeat it one more time.
And it will even work on a ball of hair?
Oh, yeah.
You're going to be my husband's best friend if this works.
My hair is really coarse, and it's very long, and it doesn't matter if I use a little strainer. Yeah. Some of it always end up going down the drain. So after about a month, I have to do this.
So this will work even if it's just I don't have a bathtub up there. It's just a shower drain.
Sure.
Okay.
Any kind of drain.
All right.
It doesn't matter. And this is so much better than using that caustic chemical Drano that everybody uses, or calling that man the rooter.
That man
who will come in with, you know, expensive bill.
Just say no to crack.
Yeah, exactly. So just doing it every month will prevent really bad, you know, clogged drain. And one quick tip is your shower head.
Yeah.
What I usually do once a month again is if you have one of those handheld showers, you can take it off the holder, put it in a bowl filled with white vinegar, and leave the shower head in there for a good half hour.
And that's especially good if you have the hard water and you get that residue, right?
Right,
the minerals.
And then it just gets, it gets the hole really, caked on with the minerals and salts. If you can't take it off, what you do is you fill a Ziploc bag or something, fill it up with white vinegar, and then put it around the shower head, use a rubber band or something to tie it and leave it there for, an hour or so.
Okay.
Or maybe even overnight. I don't know. It depends.
Now, if it's possible to do quickly, what do you do with mildew and that mold that cuts in the grout?
First of all, don't use Clorox.
Yeah.
Using bleach on the mold, all you're doing is literally just changing the color of the mold. You're not killing the mold.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the popular belief, that you have to use bleach to kill the mold around the bathtub. But the best way to do it, actually, what I do is, first of all, you have to get rid of the moisture, right? So you have to wipe down as much as you can. I don't sometimes. So I do get that. And I use vinegar to wipe it down, as vinegar is like the best.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see that, I don't know, like different coloration around the joints.
Yeah.
What I do is I have t-shirt strips that I cut out and I soak that in hydrogen peroxide.
Oh.
And then I put it around the bathtub for about an hour or so.
Hmm.
Not too long, because what happens is that it will, especially if you have a silicone caulking, it'll hydrogen peroxide will eat up the silicone.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah, so you don't want to have that. If you just have regular grout, then you could leave it on for a while, and it'll kill mold, and you won't see that discoloration.
Okay.
But if you have silicone, you got to be careful. You don't leave it on too long. But hydrogen peroxide is the way to go.
Well, I know Karen will give us a post with some tips, including all this fun stuff.
Cleaning is fun, isn't it?
Cleaning is fun.
But really, using non-toxic cleaners is really the way to go.
Well, it's not just for us, but all this stuff goes down the drains and into systems. And depending on the kind of water system you're connected to, it can get into the environment.
Well, look at
all
the microbeads that end up in the water system, even though it goes through filtration or sewers, things like that they're supposed to filter out. It ends up in the water system. So whatever you use down the drain, it'll end up in the water in your aquatics.
And so don't do it, people.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Just don't do it.
Thank you, Karen. And everybody can go to Dr. Karen S. Lee. .com to find out more, but we'll have a post to go with this wonderful podcast. Thanks, Karen.
Thanks, Meg.
Find out more about this Green Divas at Home segment and lots of other great low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green at thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com. Green Divas are all about buying less and making more. But when we do buy stuff, we try to make sure it is sustainably made and supports healthy green living. Here's something we liked and wanted to share with you. Hey, you know, there's a lot of reasons why these product reviews that we're going to talk about were really nice. But one of them is that Lynn and I have been learning a lot about the horror and perils of conventional cotton. And so,
yes, conventional cotton. Ugh.
Right?
Those crops require a huge amount of chemicals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If they aren't GMO, right, they use a lot of pesticides.
Yeah. They suck up 10% of all agricultural chemicals and 25% of insecticides.
Yeah, of all the crops out there.
Of all the crops.
It, just cotton everywhere. Takes up 25%.
Yeah, and where do these chemicals go?
Yeah.
The soil, the streams, some may end up in drinking water.
Yeah, and if you do a little bit of digging, you can find out just how damaging it is, because most of it is grown in India now.
Mm-hmm.
Those farmers and their families have gotten very sick. There's a very high suicide rate. It's really upsetting when you start to understand why organic isn't just about food.
Yeah. Well, and guess how many chemicals are needed to grow enough conventional cotton for one measly t-shirt?
Really? I don't know. It sounds like it's going to be scary.
Well, it's not that scary. A third of a pound, but that's just for one t-shirt.
But that's a lot of chemicals, you know?
Yeah. And a pair of jeans is 3/4 of a pound.
So Lynn and I were fortunate to have the opportunity both to participate in this product review of some organic towels.
Yes, which I have not used today because I have not taken my shower.
I used mine, just saying. I'm not stinky. And I love my towel because I've tried a lot of different towels over the years, some bamboo and some different things. But this one is so soft and absorbent.
Yeah.
Bing, 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 bing. And that's my Ikeuchi. Ikeuchi.
You got it. Bless you.
Ikeuchi. That's funny. That's very funny. Towels that are, gosh, the company's been making organic stuff, towels primarily since 1953. Mm-hmm. They're non-GMO, which I think is important to note, right?
Right.
The organic, fair trade. 100% wind power driven in their manufacturing,
mm-hmm.
Environmentally low impact dyes. So it's a very cool product, and the prices range from $10 up to $85. And you know, there's various sizes and colors, and so that's one towel. You have some other towels also.
I had received a spa towel from Under the Canopy. Which
is
also
a spa
came
towel?
With a head wrap.
Oh, is the spa towel like the big one?
It's a biggie.
The big one.
And it's what I really, it's luxurious. It has a bit of a stretch, which I really like, but that comes from the small amount of Lycra that's in there, 1% Lycra.
All right.
Which happens to be a petroleum byproduct.
All right.
But otherwise, 100% organic cotton.
Nice.
Price range is... well, for the spa towel, $15.
What?
Head wrap is $19
for two. Wait a minute. $15?
Yeah.
That's crazy. I'm going.
I don't know.
I think they sell at Target, or is this the one in Bed Bath & Beyond?
Bed Bath & Beyond.
Yeah.
And a few other places.
I'm going there.
Mm-hmm. And that's also, of course, free of pesticides, GMOs, harmful chemicals.
Yes.
Because a lot of the chemicals come in the manufacturing process.
Right.
When you are looking at conventional cotton.
Correct.
Heavy metals, bleaches, formaldehyde. So both of these towels are not using those harmful chemicals in manufacturing, because then you end up wearing some chemicals, I would assume.
Yeah, no thank you.
So then, I love that.
And then we each got a beautiful, I love my bath mat. I have
my feet are very happy.
It's such a cushy, and they're organic.
Mm-hmm.
And they're two-sided, so they're very fluffy. They're not like just one-sided. And this is the company's Grund?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like it.
I really love it.
So we're doing sort of a bathroom linen kind of theme.
Yes, and our son is sharing our bathroom with us currently because his bath has a leak in it. So our bath mat's getting a lot of extra use.
And it's still fluffy.
And it's a teenager we're talking about here.
Yeah,
so just imagine.
Uh-huh. And it's holding up okay so far.
Yeah, well, the good thing is it seems to be very absorbent, so I don't think he uses the towel until after he steps on the bath mat for at least a period of maybe 7 minutes.
Oh, so it, yeah, a lot of water going in there.
Right.
Well, I'm actually very pleased with all these products and want to, you know, make recommendations for them. Now, for the Ikeuchi, I think at this point you can only get them in the United States through a company in Brooklyn called J Plus B Designs, and you can order them online there, and I highly recommend checking them out. If you're not in Brooklyn, go online to their website, J Plus spelled out, PLUSB Designs, or Google them, and there you have it.
Right on.
And the other ones, like Under the Canopy, of course, you can find at Bed Bath & Beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a few other places. And the Grund, I'm telling you, I think I bought a Grund bath mat because these are very similar to the ones that I already have in a different color.
Mm-hmm.
From Bed Bath & Beyond, but I could be wrong.
Well, I've seen them on Amazon, too.
There you go. So you heard it from the Green Divas. Check out this organic cotton for you, for the planet, for everybody. Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you.
To learn about more low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green, please visit thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com.
Sometimes it's really important to change perspective if we're going to make a positive change when it comes to global warming. More on that after this.
Everyone wants to be a part of the green movement, and that's a great thing. Going green takes on a whole new meaning when you add tall grass beef to your family's dinner table. It's tender and juicy, and since the cattle graze on the natural grasslands of Kansas, it's also loaded with essential fatty acids and omega-3s that regular grain-fed beef lacks. It's good for you and your family, and good for the earth. For more information and to order tall grass beef online, go to www.tallgrassbeef.com.
NASA images taken from space show a far different Earth than the one you and I experience on a daily basis. We might think that record warm temperatures, especially in the winter months, are nothing more than a reason to drive with the windows down. But it's not a pattern that bodes well for the future. A recent NASA image showed a 97% melting of the sheet ice in Greenland in a single day. This vast melt-off is a wild card in the weather deck, and the hand each of us will have to play as global warming increases. I'm Bill Curtis with Earth Matters.
Green Divas Heart Wildlife. Who can resist all those videos and images of adorable baby animals? But sometimes these adorable creatures really need our help. Let's celebrate wild animals, learn about them, and do what we can to help them. All right, this is a really important Green Divas Heart Wildlife segment because, well, for a couple of reasons. One is because our guest, Wynn Paris, who is an amazing musician and an activist, humanitarian, he's also the media director of Africa ASAP. And the ASAP stands for, yeah, as soon as possible, but also aerial surveillance against poaching. And this is all about the elephants. And if you have not seen some of the hideous images of poor elephants getting killed for tusks and perhaps other ridiculous reasons, then you're under a rock, and it's very upsetting, and who doesn't want to help the elephants? So anyway, Wynn, among your many talents, thank you for this kind of work. Hi, Wynn.
Hi, Meg. How are you?
Long-winded, but okay. Well, I know we've been trying to get together, and we will one of these days. But in the meantime, I want you to tell us about this work you're doing for the elephants.
Sure thing. Yes, I'm working with a new organization, which is called Africa ASAP. And yes, it's as soon as possible, but actually it's aerial surveillance against poaching. And we're based in Washington, D.C., and the organization has been around for 3 months now. And we have a specific answer or solution to one of the world's great problems right now, which is the horrible wildlife trafficking anti-ivory trade.
Yes.
Which is sadly causing the extinction of the elephant species. And as if that weren't bad enough already.
Right.
There's now an interaction with a lot of terrorists that are using ivory to fund their activities. So record numbers of elephants have disappeared in the last 3 years. There's a story that anyone can see from National Geographic that states 100,000 elephants have died in the last 3 years.
Oh, my God. That's, well, I want to say genocide, but, I mean, it's speciesside. I don't know what it is. It's horrible.
It's appalling. And it is like genocide because humanity is so closely linked with the story of the elephants and the mammoths and the mastodons that preceded them. There would be no human civilization without them.
Wow. I guess I hadn't really thought of that. I had just always thought of elephants as kind of these big, wise, gentle creatures.
Yes, big, yes, and wide, and sometimes gentle, but sometimes on a rampage, an indestructible force of nature,
well,
the largest creature on the planet that only fears man.
Yeah, well, that says something, doesn't it?
It sure does. And Tanzania, which is where Africa ASAP is operating, is one of the worst areas because it has a large amount of elephants. 30% of the 100,000 that were killed in Tanzania.
So in theory, 30,000 were just 30,000 alone were killed in Tanzania.
Correct.
Wow.
So it's very difficult. The poaching problem, they're very sophisticated, and they're very good at evading capture.
Yeah.
The poachers are.
Yeah.
So our, unique idea is to employ the use of airships or dirigibles like blimps.
Wow.
And those airships are outfitted with very high-end cameras and sensors. And from 3,000 feet above, they film and record the activities of the elephants and everything in a 40-mile radius on either side.
Wow.
So the goal is that this technology would be used as a tool for the Tanzanian Ranger Force, which is part of the government.
Right.
So that is our goal, and it's a formidable goal. It's we have to raise $3 million to have an operational system.
It's fascinating to use dirigibles. Now, so in theory, the elephants are generally visible. They're not necessarily obviously in forests or whatever, so they're visible. And the poachers can't shoot down, for instance, the dirigibles, or?
No. They're, it's 3,000 feet.
Yeah, it's too high.
Above the ground is pretty high. they can't, from the ground, you can't shoot them down.
And so obviously the Tanzanian government and the rangers involved are obviously on board and willing to enforce whatever, proof and footage would come?
Yes. We're working with the International Federation of Rangers and with one specific organization called PAMS Foundation. And it's the work of the vice president from the International Federation of Rangers, and Mr. Wayne Lauder.
Okay.
And he's our guy on the ground. He's working in conjunction with the U.S. Embassy and also in conjunction with the Tanzanian government and he has the contract to train the Rangers.
Well, I'm extremely interested in this for a number of reasons, but I really hope that this can, you know, provide a way to stop and, you know, at least significantly slow down and deter some of this horrible practice.
Yeah, that's the only thing that we can really do is to do something before the elephants get killed to try to address the problem after the ivory has been extracted.
Yeah.
Is really, you know, that's, first of all, that's the realm for the International Police Association,
right,
like Interpol. It's a smuggling and trafficking operation.
Right.
And it's really funded by the Chinese. You know, although it goes through various countries from Africa, you know, and it is just so corrupt. They have not had much luck. They've never caught an ivory kingpin.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
So, you know, our only hope is to do something before the elephants are killed.
Well, I am, you know, with you 100%. And how can people help?
Well, specifically for our operation, AfricaASAP.org is the first step.
Okay.
And then there are many other wonderful organizations that are there actively involved on many different fronts. So there's, you know, there is a big movement.
Yes.
For this, and there's also a governmental and a, you know, international campaigns.
Well, I do know that our Green Diva Lynn will put together a wonderful post, and I'm sure you'll help her get the right organizations and information, and we'll obviously highlight Africa ASAP and your wonderful work. Thank you so much, Wynn.
Thank you, Meg. It's been a pleasure.
And I'm looking forward to meeting you soon.
Sounds good.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Green Divas Heart Wildlife. Please visit thegreendivas.com, that's T-H-E, greendivas.com, to learn more about wildlife, nature, and a whole lot more. Wishing you had a green thumb? Or want to learn more about sustainable gardening outdoors and in? Expert Green Divas and Dude Gardeners share tips for everything from composting to growing herbs in your kitchen. Listen to the Green Divas Green Thumb for low-stress gardening tips.
This is Gardening in 2 Minutes. When it comes to adding adequate nitrogen to the soil of your garden, it's easier than you may think. Nitrogen is one of the key elements of growing. You have nitrogen, potassium, and phosphates. With peas, beans, and clover, this is a natural process that Mother Nature takes care of themselves on its own.
This is done to add the nitrogen to the soil. And if you pull up the roots of any of these bean-type plants, the nitrogen-creating plants, you will see these little rhizomes on the roots if you rinse them off or get the dirt off of them.
They're just little bumps. Now, each one of these little bumps, there's a symbiotic relationship with the plants that can take the nitrogen that is naturally in the air and convert it to a method of where the plants can take it up and use it for proper plant growth. By allowing the roots to stay in the soil, you can just trim the top portions off. As those roots break down, they will release a little bit of nitrogen in the soil where they're currently at. Not tons, not like you would add a 12-0-0 fertilizer to the garden bed, but it's a natural process of decay and breakdown of the roots that will release nitrogen back into the soil to help bring the soil back to a level that plants will be able to grow properly on. For more information about beans, peas, clover, and other legumes that produce their own nitrogen, our weekly video productions, as well as our free downloadable digital quarterly magazines, You can find all that information at
thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.
For the health conscious organic gardener worldwide. For Gardening in 2 Minutes, I'm Joy Baird.
And I'm Holly Baird.
Inspired to grow more organic stuff? We are. To learn more about this Green Diva's Green Thumb episode and all kinds of other great green information, visit thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Melbourne, Australia is getting hotter because of a warming climate and what is known as the urban heat island effect. Buildings, sidewalks, and streets all absorb heat and make cities hotter than the surrounding countryside. In an effort to cool the city, officials have begun planting trees. So far, they've planted 12,000 toward a target of 42,000. Melbourne Councillor Aaron Wood says this urban forest strategy was developed during record-breaking heat, a 13-year drought, and more intense rainfall events. With ongoing global warming, this extreme weather is expected to intensify.
We're getting less rainfall, but we're getting much more intense rainfall events than we've ever had previously.
In addition to cooling the city, the growing trees improve the soil and help absorb heavy downpours, which diminishes flooding. And it's easy to gain public support for tree planting.
A lot of people have really taken ownership of the urban forest, and they're really interested to know what new species will be planted. When will their street be renewed in terms of the urban forest?
Considered one of the world's most livable cities, Melbourne aims to stay that way with the help of the trees. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
The Green Divas get to talk to so many inspiring people, who each in their own way is helping us find a deeper shade of green. Here's just one of them. Enjoy.
I'm excited again to be speaking to Ken Cook, who is the president and co-founder of one of our favorite organizations that we reference almost every show,
yeah,
right, Lynn?
Absolutely.
I mean, EWG, which for those of you who don't know, is Environmental Working Group. Hi, Ken.
Hi, how are you? I'm so glad to be amongst the Green Divas again.
And you're a green dude, so hey, this is a great thing.
Yeah, or Green Devo. We have some people now wanting to call our green dudes Green Devos. You know, you have to pick which one makes you feel best. But
you know, I'm whatever works. I'm in favor of.
Okay.
So, you know, you guys are always, I mean, the databases that Environmental Working Group that you all put together. There's so much research and good information that we reference all the time, and we ask people to go there frequently, and we link to it all the time. So now you have this app, this Food Scores app. So instead of me having to necessarily call up one of your wonderful databases and flip through it while I'm standing in the supermarket, which I've done before, by the way, now we have this fantastic Food Scores app, which I was playing with it, and it quickly will take a barcode using your smartphone and research the database instantly to see. And so tell us a bit about what Food Scores is and how we can all use it.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on the program. I'm thrilled myself. And we really just deeply value people who follow these issues with the depth and the integrity that you follow them, because we're really in the business at the Environmental Working Group of making sure that consumers have the facts at their fingertips that our scientists feel are critically important for them to make the healthiest choices they can for themselves and their family. And, of course, we've got a whole series of databases on our website, some of which before this did have apps, for example, Skin Deep.
Right.
Our database of personal care product ingredients, we rate something like 78,000, I think, at this point, different products, and that includes thousands of ingredients and many hundreds of brands. And as with Food Scores, you can go and scan a product with the camera in your smartphone, and whether it's an Apple product or an Android phone, you can get the score right there at point of purchase or as you're shopping, roving the aisles looking for things that you feel will pass our test. Well, we decided we needed to do a skin deep for food.
Yeah.
We decided that we get so many questions from people about all the stuff that's in food these days and has been in for many years, and questions about nutrition, questions about contaminants. So our first step was to assemble a big database that contains at this point over 80,000 food products that you would find in your grocery store. We don't include restaurant foods. We include foods from almost every aisle.
Wow.
There are a few blank spots or blind spots for some product categories. For example, if you're in the produce aisle and you buy a bagged item, apples, for example, or celery or loose lettuce that's been pre-wrapped, that'll show up. But if you buy just a couple of apples that are in the bin, we won't have a universal product code or a database entry for that.
Right.
But and there are a few other exceptions like that. But by and large, even with a lot of prepared foods, we do have data from various
stores. Because I looked up Brad's kale chips, and they came up, and I was like, I didn't even know if that might be regional. I just wasn't sure. But yeah.
Well, it's a big data set, not complete. There are tens of thousands, but it's a good start. And what we wanted to do was rate these foods in different ways. So we looked at their nutritional value. That's the main basis for our score. We looked at health concerns about ingredients, and that's everything from additives, colorings, preservatives, and so forth. Then we also looked at contaminants, things that end up in food unintentionally in most cases or unavoidably, mercury in tuna, arsenic in rice, BPA in canned foods, and so forth.
Oh, Lord.
And we developed a very sophisticated scoring system, which we lay out, which a lot of websites that do this kind of rating of consumer products don't. But we really pride ourselves on being completely transparent on how we reached scoring decisions.
Well, I think it's incredibly important and helpful. And you have, it's like NIP, I think, right? Nutrition, ingredients, and processing.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right.
And it's been
wonderful. We found out that, the average food and food scores has 14 ingredients. It has a 58% chance of containing added sugar. It's got a 46% chance of containing an artificial or natural flavor, although natural often means anything but natural.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's valuable both for consumers looking at specific foods or categories to shop smarter, shop for cleaner foods with fewer ingredients. But it's also good from a research standpoint for us and for others to be able to look at the foods in aggregate and go through and ask questions. I asked a question the other day, how many ingredients on average are in foods that have an organic certification in our database?
Yeah, that would be interesting.
Conventional. And it turned out that overall, something like 14 ingredients, as I mentioned, in the average food, and then in organic, it's only 9.
Huh, okay.
So there's no requirement that organic food have fewer ingredients. That's not really part of the organic standard. There are thousands of ingredients that cannot be used in organic food.
Yeah.
They're prohibited. But the interesting thing to me was that it turned out that category by category, organic food companies consistently add fewer and have fewer ingredients in their products. So just right there, you're getting a sense that there's a divide in the food system, as it were, that shoppers can think through and maybe take advantage of if that's of interest.
Wow. So along with, creating the app and all of the research you're doing, you're gathering this other data that obviously is going to start telling a story. It's already telling a story because you're saying that organic food, for no particular reason, it's not that they're required, but they appear to use less ingredients, which, does kind of make sense because it seems to me that things that are more naturally less processed or the way that they're produced more naturally and organically sincerely, just don't use all these extra things. They're just more whole, healthy foods.
That's right. I mean, many ingredients, as I say, there are thousands that are approved for conventional food that cannot be used in organic. But I was really impressed. And, I guess it's in part because I know a lot of people who work in the organic food business, both growers
Right.
For the fresh market, you're growing farm level products, livestock, crops, and so forth. But also a number of people who work in great companies like Amy's Kitchen or Annie's or Stonyfield or Organic Valley. As you get to know these folks and their philosophy, you can see why they may be allowed to use more ingredients than they do, but they really do try not to.
Yeah.
And so I think that tells you a lot about the integrity, in my view, of the organic system. But it also it gives consumers a window on the possibilities, right? I mean, you could make a conventional food product that didn't have organic ingredients with fewer ingredients,
right.
fewer additives, fewer colorings and preservatives and so forth. And I think that's the way the food system actually is starting to move, and we're mm-hmm. excited about that. We think this food scores database and the app that you can use as you shop your way through the aisles at the grocery store, we think that that can help contribute to that awareness that will send a signal back to manufacturers.
Oh, definitely.
And we'll end up, we hope, with the food that's got fewer artificial ingredients
in it. It's helping to create that transparency. Because it is difficult as a consumer to remember all the names of things and what is it I'm supposed to be looking for, not looking for.
Oh, my goodness.
And it makes grocery shopping take three times longer if you have to sit there and stare at a label for each and everything you buy.
The names, right?
Yeah.
The ingredients. And then there are, you know, sort of classic things. Like if you want to find out which foods have, you know, excessive sugar in them, added sugar that might be worrisome. So just a quick look through the database shows you that crackers have 63% of them have added sugars in crackers. Peanut butter, 68%. Salad
ketchup.
Dressings, 86%. Stuffing mixes, we just finished the holiday seasons, right? Thanksgiving and Christmas. These stuffing mixes, 100% of the ones in our database, and we have quite a few, 100% have added sugar.
Wow.
So,
weird.
You know, again, the concern of so many today is that we've allowed sugar to, in effect, displace some other ingredients that we've tried to reduce. And as a consequence, we're consuming way too much. And it's not just breakfast cereals. It's not just candy bars, granola bars, what have you. It's food in almost every aisle.
I mean, ketchup, isn't ketchup like the first ingredients is usually corn syrup or sugar?
Yeah.
Yes,
like,
not
yes,
tomatoes.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Ketchup, almost all the ketchups we looked at had added sugars in them.
Yeah.
So, you know, just from the standpoint of asking basic questions, this is going to be a very valuable database and a very valuable tool for people as they shop. People are starting to, we've had millions and millions of searches on the site already through the app and directly on computers. And we've had lots of reaction from consumers saying this is now how I go about my shopping. And we're going to be putting out some additional capabilities, some functionality to the app and the database so you can prepare your shopping list. You can keep track of the foods you like to buy, you're fond of, and so forth. So we really feel, and eventually maybe some recipes, add that functionality. So
Ooh.
We're really
oh,
hoping
that'd be
that
great.
This can be a tool that people can use for a lot of their culinary needs.
Well, okay, so what I was going towards before was this transparency thing that you mentioned and about the reaction and obviously, millions of people are using it, and how many people will be motivated to say to manufacturers, hey, you know, I liked your product, but I'm not doing this anymore. And hopefully this will kind of have an effect, a positive effect. I mean, I'm sure that's what's going to happen on these manufacturers that are sort of getting away with all these additives that we don't need and shouldn't have.
Oh, I think that's exactly right, and people, you know, they'll get a choice.
Yeah, exactly. And people
just
vote with their.
Give you an example, you know. So I typed in Doritos.
I can't even
imagine
what that looks like.
Super Bowl. Time,
wait a minute.
Right?
Wait a minute. I cannot believe you just said that, and I have to tell you why. Because just before I was playing with the app, and I typed in Doritos because I couldn't think of like
GDESP.
It's GDESP. Yeah. Sorry, I just couldn't believe that you said Doritos, and that's
well. There we are. Well, you know, here we are at the Super Bowl time, and
I guess maybe that's it.
You know, everyone's, and of course we're not here to tell people how to eat. We're not here to shame people or anything. I mean, we want people to use this as a tool, and I've had more than a few Doritos in my hand in my time, right? And my little boy, I have to kind of keep him away from them.
Green Diva confession.
all the ingredients in these Doritos gives them a pretty poor score than, you know, the many varieties that they come in our database. And they're not very good nutritionally, no surprise there.
I wonder if they could actually processed. could the Doritos break the app because the score is so bad?
just too many ingredients to list
like
on the
page. Like it just explodes.
Well, there's some products that really probably do strain the system in that regard. But, you know, so here you are coming into Super Bowl. You want to maybe have a party with all your friends. Just think about something different than Doritos as you do that.
You could turn it into an app party.
Yes, and, that's right.
You know, guess what food score you're going to get. I think
exactly
that's
right.
Great. And what I'm noticing on your website, too, is that if you donate to EWG, you get a one-of-a-kind cookbook with tips and recipes.
Yes, we have one of the wonderful, talented people on our staff put that together, Ashley McCormick. It's called EWG Eats. And we have some fantastic recipes from, you know, Michael Pollan and Mark Bittman and, Alice Waters, a whole bunch of people, Nora Puyon.
Wow.
And we've been really excited to offer that to people, and it helps us a little bit with respect to fundraising. And for all of those reasons, we're finding that food is a way to talk to people about the environment, and the environment's a great way to talk to people about food.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
we're very excited about this new product, this new app. It's, again, available for both the Apple ecosystem and also for Android. And then, you know, if you prefer, just before you head off to the store, you can go onto your computer at home and or at the office and search it that way as well.
Now, I have one question, and that is about GMOs, which I know is huge. It's not probably... that deserves its own app and show, you know.
right.
But in terms of this food score app, how are GMOs handled in there, and is there any consideration for non-GMO?
Well, there's no consideration in the score per se. We didn't really know how to score it because there's a debate about whether we have enough evidence to demonstrate health issues with GMOs, but we know it's a critically important right of consumers to know if the food they're eating has GMOs. So we do in the database, we note if it is organic, and of course GMOs aren't allowed in organic. We also note if it's a certified non-GMO by the non-GMOs project, and then we also list for foods that we know have corn in them or other ingredients that generally originate in crops that have been genetically engineered and are prevalent in agriculture. We will make a note of that. So you'll say something to the effect likely to contain ingredients that are derived from genetically engineered food.
I was thinking about Doritos, you know.
Yeah, there you go. Yep,
you know, that's
exactly
probably
right.
Not organic corn in there.
Yeah, that's probably right. And so we say in here that it's not organic. We make that pretty clear.
Yeah.
And we also note all the synthetic food dyes. It has ingredient flavors.
Yeah.
And so forth. So yeah, we tend to make note of that.
Wow.
I love it.
Well, I appreciate all the work you're doing.
I do too.
Loving this app. Yeah, Lynn's. We're both big fans, Ken.
Oh well, thank you so much, and stick with it because we think the app as you see it now will probably be, you know, we hope significantly improved and made even more useful for people as the years wear on.
Oh,
because
I have...
we want to keep it up to date, and we want to make it as relevant as we can possibly make it. So when new science breaks, when new news comes out about ingredients that maybe are no longer allowed in Europe, for example, or something like that, we will use the food database to evaluate that
and
publish information.
Well, I have no doubt that things will all get more interesting and evolve as more information comes, because you guys are on top of it, man.
Well, thank you so much. That's our aim.
Thanks, Ken. I hope we get to talk to you soon.
Thank you, Ken.
Me too. Thanks again for having me on the show.
Hope you enjoyed that as much as they did. please visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. For more fun podcasts and information on the Green Divas and low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green. You've been listening to the Green Divas Radio Show. Be sure to look for this and other Green Diva Network podcasts on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes, Swell Radio, and Spreaker. Get social with the Green Divas on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Subscribe to the Green Divas YouTube channel to watch them in action. And for all the latest good green news, visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com.